The commitment to restore and protect the Great Lakes and Michigan's waterways seems to be at an all-time high. At the same time, there are new and growing threats. There is an optimism that is tempered with sincere concern. It's a time that calls for vigilance and strong action. I'm David Fair, and this is WEMU's First Friday Focus on the Environment. My co-host for this monthly feature on 89.1 WEMU is Lisa Wozniak. Lisa is the Executive Director of the Michigan League of Conservation Voters. And Lisa, good morning.
Good morning, David.
And our guest today, Lisa, is my original co-host of this First Friday segment and one of the strongest environmental advocates the state of Michigan has ever known.
Indeed. Our guest this morning is none other than Lana Pollack, former state senator, former president of the Michigan Environmental Council, and now U.S. Section Chair of the International Joint Commission, a position to which she was appointed in 2010 by President Obama. Welcome back to WEMU, Lana.
Thank you.
Always good to have you here.
There are so many issues related to the Great Lakes, as David pointed out, and we could discuss many today. I'd like to begin, however, with a focus on the recently released International Joint Commission, the 16th Biennial Report on the Great Lakes. This report was developed involving teams of scientists, engineers, planners, technical experts, and it focuses on three key areas. What are they, Lana, and why those choices?
The chemical, the biological, and the physical health of the lakes. I mean, when you develop a report card on something as complex as the ecosystem of the Great Lakes, you have a lot of choices. You have to do an elimination. Some of that elimination is determined by, well, what's the most important elements? Some of it is, which ones do we have data for? And so getting a good report card that it is not so comprehensive that it's so complex that it just overwhelms the reader, but yet it's got enough in it and is not too simple that it misses important points. And that's what we try to do here with 16 different indicators that we've included in this report.
So how about the chemical integrity of the Great Lakes at this point? Good news, bad news, or stable?
More good than bad, but nothing is ever stable in the Great Lakes because it's a dynamic system. There's always new threats, and there's always a need for vigilance and response. But the work that was done with the passage of the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, the Clean Drinking Water Act, and a number of other acts, both in Canada and the United States, in the mid-70s mostly, early-mid-70s, that made a difference in the chemical health of the lakes. We simply banned certain things. We controlled certain things. We changed certain actions and activities. That had a good result. The main, I'd say, outstanding chemical challenge here is still from mercury, which is deposited via air mostly from coal-burning power plants. That's still a major issue that we have to deal with.
Are there still fertilizer issues, though, or farm-related issues as it pertains to the chemical piece?
We actually measure those more on the biological. That's the second large one because the biological, chemical, biological, and physical. So on the biological side, what we see is, take Lake Erie, for instance, which was in dire straits in the early 70s, and frankly is again today
major algae blooms.
Major algae blooms extending, frankly, bigger and longer than even in the 70s.
And growing dead zones, too.
And growing dead zones that are, and that is related to the chemical the phosphates primarily in the lakes. And the phosphates, the main source of that is the fertilizer that gets applied to the fields, the farmers' fields. Fields are either already saturated or they're frozen because they apply it in the winter and it runs off when the spring melt comes.
No, in this biological section as well, it also deals with species, some that are dying out and disappearing and others that shouldn't be here but are.
That's right. And there's a lot of competition because what we have is aquatic invasive species. The primary source vector for them, they came in the ballast water of ships that come in to the Great Lakes from Asia or Europe come in. Sometimes they're not carrying cargo, and said they have ballast tanks at the bottom to stabilize them. They fill up with water from some Asian or European or other port, and they used to come in here, and they would just dump that water into the Great Lakes when they took on their cargo to ship out. The IJC, the organization for which I work, and many other environmentalists warned about this, but the shipping industry was very powerful. And until recently, there were no controls. There are controls now. There's arguments whether the controls are strong enough.
But there's always an argument over ballast standards.
That's right. But the good news is that at least as far as we know, since 2006, there's been no establishment of a new invasive species. That's good news. That's the longest period of time there's been, and it's the result, again,
so then if you rate the biological integrity, is it good or is it better?
I can't say it's a lot better until we get a handle on the farming phosphates coming off. The other biological threat I'll just mention briefly, of course, is the Asian carp. So far, we've held them back with a number of different programs. There's a great deal of investment in that effort. And I actually congratulate the government in the last, federal government and the state governments in the last few years have been smart about their investments in keeping them back.
And there was the recent announcement on the part of Governor Quinn from Illinois coming out of the Great Lakes Governor's convening on Mackinac Island that he actually supports the potential separation of the waterways, which is directly related to the carp. Is that something that the IJC will be involved in or connected to in some ways?
What we'll be doing is looking at the value of that. We'll be looking at the sufficiency of it. And I think one of the things we have to note is that if that happens, and personally, I hope it does, and I think it will, but it'll be years and years and years away. And there are other ways for the carp to get in as well. So there is no silver bullet on this.
And there's a huge cost associated with it, which I think is underlying all of the next steps. And we're talking billions of dollars. And the amount of money, as I understand it, going to Great Lakes restoration on the U.S. side of things, at least at this point, is approximately $300 million annually, which is fantastic. But to actually take care just of the Asian carp, that in and of itself is just a pittance.
You wouldn't want the Asian carp to be seen as the only threat to the lakes, mm-hmm. or the only need.
Mm-hmm. Well, the physical integrity of the Great Lakes, we have to bring into the conversation climate change. Certainly, climate change is cyclical, has been in the history of the planet, and will continue to be, but we seem to be exacerbating the problem. As human beings, we have lower ice levels, therefore lower water levels, and that is having numerous impacts, some of which we know about well, some of which we haven't even really considered.
That's right. It's a complicated system, but it's not beyond anybody's comprehension. When people look for simple answers to the low water levels, they usually miss something. There's been a lot of talk, a great deal of talk, about the consequence of dredging, historic dredging, in the St. Clair River. There was dredging in the St. Clair River going on for 100 years between the 1850s and 1962, when the last dredging was really undertaken. And that did lower the water level somewhat, but that doesn't explain the low water levels today. Today's low water levels are a consequence of a number of things, but the new player on the block is, of course, climate change. Warmer winters, warmer waters means less ice, and that means more evaporation. Most of the lake evaporation happens in the winter when there's a greater contrast between air and water temperature. And this is what climate change looks like on the Great Lakes. It looks like lower water levels, and that's hurting people substantially in Georgian Bay, but it's starting to hurt elsewhere as well.
From the IJC's perspective, you must be hearing a lot on this from residents on in both Canada and the United States. And what kinds of reactions has the IJC had to the residents along the Georgian Bay or along other waterways where they've seen these significant water level drops?
Well, independent of this report, we also were involved with two other studies, and those studies looked at the water levels in Lake Ontario, separate Lake Ontario, and then the St. Lawrence River and Seaway downstream, and then upstream we looked at the other lakes and concluded that, again, as I said, some of the water level can be explained by the historic dredging, but only a little of it, and that there's these complicated set of factors, including the evaporation. The majority of the commission suggested that the government's study putting some speed bumps in the lake in the St. Clair River to slow the water levels there. I didn't sign that majority report. I felt it was a little weak on focusing on climate change, which is the main thing we're going to have to be dealing with. We're going to have to be dealing with adaptive management, which means let's look at what we have and let's see how we can manage all of the uses of the lakes.
With rapidly changing factors.
With rapidly changing factors, as they are, not as we wish they would be.
You are listening to 89.1 WEMU, and I'm David Fair. This is WEMU's First Friday Focus on the Environment. The first Friday of every month, we take 20 minutes to explore an issue of environmental importance. Today, it's the Great Lakes and Michigan's waters. My co-host for the segment is Executive Director of the Michigan League of Conservation Voters. That is Lisa Wozniak. And our guest is Ann Arbor's own Lana Pollack, who currently serves as U.S. Chair of the International Joint Commission.
In addition to the various facets of this report that lay out the physical, the biological, and the chemical health of our lakes, there are a number of factors that are ongoing that continue to, frankly, be additional threats to lakes. And one I think of that's getting some attention right now is the spider web of pipelines that crisscross the state of Michigan, most of which are completely invisible to the residents of the state, and one of which actually passes directly under within the Mackinac Straits and under the Mackinac Bridge. There's said to be a proposed increase in the amount of oil pushing through that very old pipeline. What role does the IJC play in any of that? It's a Canada-U.S. issue. Where does the IJC fall on this?
Well, so far we have not played a role. And that is because everything we do needs to have some binational agreement. At this point, the Canadian commissioners have not agreed to look at that. Pipelines are very particular importance, as we know from considering Keystone. It's not just the Keystone pipeline. There's a big commitment to the pipeline system by the government of Canada. And although we are, each of us, we take two oaths of office when we come to the commission. We swear to uphold the Constitution from our respective countries. We also take an oath to administer the treaty which establishes us without regard to our nationality. But there's no doubt that we come with our own backgrounds. And at this point, the Canadians commissioners have chosen to not address that issue.
And I mean, we're talking about pipelines. We have some new pipeline being built by Enbridge right through Washtenaw County right now. Of course, we know what happened with the Kalamazoo River when the Enbridge pipeline broke, and they have a record of doing so. And the tar sand kind of oil that is being pumped through some of these pipes was not meant to be pumped through some of these pipes. The pipes are not meant to withstand this kind of very heavy, dirty, laden oils that are coming through. And that would pose risk to the Huron River and then on down into Lake Erie and the rest of our waterways.
Well, from a perspective of the Great Lakes, I've often thought that it's interesting to see the extensive attention that the Keystone has received, that it might pass through sensitive aquifers. Well, we've got a lot of pipelines passing through undoubtedly sensitive Great Lakes. And I think perhaps the environmental community, of which I've been a longstanding member, has been remiss in pointing attention, drawing attention to this risk and to the changing conditions and the changing heavier pressures. They're asking to double the pressure on these pipelines that were built from one set of conditions. So I think I wouldn't look at this point to the IJC to be too responsive. That may change with new commissioners, but I therefore that means that others must step up. There's also a question of shipping large amounts of oil on the Great Lakes on barges. That's been proposed also from Superior, Wisconsin. The end of a pipeline there would offload, under this proposal, substantial amounts of barge oil for shipment across the Great Lakes. That, too, is something that I wouldn't look to the IJC to address in the near term. but it's something that the environmental community and the United States government and the government of Michigan and the government of the other seven Great Lakes states.
And Lisa, I know you've, as a very visual thing, you've taken great interest in what is going on along the Detroit River, which of course creates a water boundary between Detroit and Windsor.
Right. I was actually going to bring that very issue up, which is when you speak about the oil issue and the pipelines issue, you must look at the most recent news about the Marathon Petroleum Refinery and the growing mountain of petroleum coke waste product that's growing on the shores of the Detroit River. And I know that both the Canadians have expressed their concern. This is actually a Koch brothers-owned facility. What to do with that? Because it is of international concern at this point. It's a growing mountain of waste, very, very polluted and toxic, if you will, and it's on the shores of the Detroit River.
Yes, and it is very much evidence of the kind of material that is produced with the when you refine the oil sands, which the Canadians prefer to tar sands, mm-hmm. but call it oil sands or call it tar sands, it does have this waste product. The waste product is this pet coat, very high in sulfur. Sometimes the only use apparently is to ship it to a place that would burn it for fuel, which would then put high CO2 levels into the air. China allows it to be burned. India allows it to be burned. There's no other real use for this waste product, and it is growing.
And you're saying this is not an International Joint Commission issue per se. It's more a federal government or state government or even a Detroit municipal issue?
It might become an International Joint Commission. Let me just say this again. We are a binational organization that has done great things over our 100-year history. But in each case, it depends on the cooperation of the commissioners from both countries. There have been times in our history, and I could point them out, where the United States commissioners have been a little slow to step up to some environmental threats, and there are times where the Canadians might have been a little slower. So we'll see. We haven't been asked by the governments. Also, I want to state this. We have a fairly large area of that we can pick up on the Great Lakes, but we really, in many cases, need to be authorized by our governments to do it. I'll also want to say this, that the government of Canada, the governance of Canada, puts a lot of authority into their provinces. And the government of Ontario, which is essentially most of the Great Lakes boundary, along with Quebec, both Quebec and Ontario, those two governments are quite acutely aware of these threats and quite determined to do right by the environment. So you have some differences in politics in Canada, as you do in the United States.
Our time together is just about up, but I want to ask you this. Given the conversation we've had, all of the elements that we've both discussed and left untouched for the moment, would you say which is greater, optimism for the restoration and protection of the Great Lakes or the new and growing threats to the Great Lakes?
I'm optimistic because the Great Lakes right now are actually one of the few bipartisan points of mostly agreement in Congress. That's remarkable. And we want to hang on to that. And that, to me, will drive things forward, and I think that will catch in Canada as well.
Lana Pollack, thank you so much. We always enjoy your company. That is Lana Pollack, the U.S. Chair of the International Joint Commission, and a special thank you to my co-host for this environmental segment, Lisa Wozniak. She is the Executive Director of the Michigan League of Conservation Voters, and we'll see you Friday, July 5th.
I look forward to it, David.
I'm David Fair, and this has been the June edition of First Friday Focus on the Environment, a monthly feature heard only as part of Morning Edition on 89.1 WEMU.